Hello and welcome to Shoot the Hostage with me, Dan, and my partner, Sarah. We're a movie podcast who talks about a different film each week based on a theme. We do swear and we do spoil the featured movie, so only ever listen if you've seen the film or you don't care too much about spoilers. If you're a regular listener, you can just skip forward until you hear the intro music because you've heard all of this before. But if you are new to the show and you do enjoy what you hear, there are a couple of things you can do to help support the show. Firstly, make sure that you're subscribed on your podcast player so you get notified when new shows drop on Mondays. You could rate us 5 stars on Spotify, which couldn't be easier. You just hit the star icon below the show's artwork. Or if you have a spare few minutes, we'd love it if you could submit a review wherever you listen. Make sure you come follow us at STH_pod on social media. We are active on Instagram, X, Threads, and TikTok. And lastly, the biggest thing you can do to help is tell a friend about the show. So that's about it. That's enough preamble from me. Over to me and Sarah for this week's episode. Right, Sarah.
Yes.
We are still in our neo-western phase season. I don't know why I said phase.
It's not the MCU, Dan.
No. Phase 5. Episode 38.
Yeah.
That's going up, as you would expect.
Yeah, as numbers tend to do.
Yeah, it's so awkward, these starts to the podcast, aren't they?
They're like, never... Oh, I mean, we're awkward people.
Yeah, that's true.
They're never going to sound great, are they?
Yeah. We're nowhere near as cool as the people in this movie.
No
cast,
way.
Rather than characters. Near Dark, mm-hmm. 1987.
Yes.
Our first vampire movie?
I think so, yeah, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, nearly 40 episodes and we've done one vampire movie. I've got a feeling, though, we're saving some up for a vampire season.
I mean, I would love that. Mm. Vampires are very much my jam.
Yep, I enjoy a vampire movie too.
Yeah.
My favourite vampire movie also came out in 1987.
Is it The Lost Boys?
It's The Lost Boys.
Is that your favourite vampire movie?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. It's certainly the one that I've seen most.
It's a classic.
It is a classic.
It came out the same year and had a relative of somebody in this movie was in it as well.
A relative of someone in... right, I know what you're going to say, yeah. Are you revealing that information now?
Sure. I mean, Joshua Miller, I want to say, is the... child in Near Dark, yeah. Homer. And he's the half-brother of Jason Patrick.
Right.
Who are both the sons of Jason Miller.
I had no idea. Yeah. You mentioned that the other day. I had no clue. So not only did, let's say, two of the best vampire movies ever made came
in
out
our
in
opinion,
1987. Oh, spoilers.
Yeah.
They're also, that they have the same bloodline.
Yeah. It's a weird way of phrasing it, but appropriate, I guess.
But this is not the first Tangerine Dream scored. That was difficult to get out. This is not the first Tangerine Dream scored movie that we've covered, is it?
Is it the second?
Yeah.
So we've done Thief.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
I couldn't tell you what else they did.
We've seen something else that they did recently. Yeah. I guess it wasn't for the podcast though, but I feel like they've been a credit that's been popping up quite frequently in this house of late.
Yeah, it is kind of our jam, isn't it?
Yeah.
Obviously, the score in Thief is amazing. Mm-hmm. The same applies here.
Yes.
When did you first see this one? Because this is this wasn't really on my radar mm-hmm. at all, which is surprising to me.
It shocked me that you hadn't seen this film.
And we watched it. I watched it for the first time with you. Mm-hmm. You introduced me to it. We've seen it 3 times together now.
Yeah.
first time when you showed it to me. Second time was for a vampire festival.
Yep.
One of our own sit-at-home film festivals that we do.
It sounds... There's no way to describe it without it sounding super pretentious.
They're
a lot of fun, though.
I wouldn't say pretentious. Well, it's not like we're watching Shakespeare in Love or fucking... stuff like that, is it? It's always... Well, that particular one was for Vampire, mm-hmm. Vampire Festival. This was my third time watching this. And as I say, you introduced me to it. But mm-hmm. how did you come about watching this for the first time?
I'm ashamed to say I don't really remember. I wish I did. I know that, I mean, I covered it on my last podcast.
On Gore Press?
I've already covered this film. I'm a huge fan of it. And a huge fan of vampire movies in general. So I want to say probably early 20s is when I watched it. Mm. And it might have been the first Catherine Bigelow movie. Oh, no, I would have seen Point Break.
Okay.
I'd have seen Point Break at that point. So maybe the second Catherine Bigelow film I ever saw. Yeah, I don't know. I loved it instantly. Immediately.
I did too. When you showed it to me, immediately I was just... I think even after like maybe the first 10 minutes, I was like, what's this going to be? But it sounded great and it looked nice.
Yeah.
But then when it got into it and you get introduced to the team, which we'll get to... I was just like in. So this is great. Some of the coolest visuals I think I've ever seen in a vampire movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just got so much going for it. You mentioned Catherine Bigelow there.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a really impressive filmography. She's done some brilliant movies.
Yeah.
Really, really good director.
What's your favorite Catherine Bigelow movie?
I was thinking about this, and I think it might be this.
Yeah, it is for me.
Is it?
Yeah.
Hands down.
Yeah, there's no contest.
What's your second favourite?
Maybe The Hurt Locker, but I haven't seen it in a while. Well, I know I really enjoyed it when it came out, though.
Kelsey Priest, our answer is the same.
Right.
For the longest time, it was The Hurt Locker, because okay. I just think that's a really incredible movie.
Mm-hmm.
Renner's best performance, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And... yeah, I would have said that. She won the Oscar for that, first woman to ever win a Best Director Oscar.
What year was that?
2000 and... it was 2009 or 10. And the movie's 2009.
That's wild.
Yeah, I know. It's nuts, isn't it? But yeah, it's weird that I hadn't... I wonder if... I'm not sure if I'd even heard of it. Like, I must have done, because it does seem familiar somewhat. Or maybe the poster did, but it was never, ever something that was on my radar. And I think... sort of looking at, we watched your Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm. My shitty, shitty vanilla Blu-ray with the cover that looks like some sort of Twilight ripoff.
Yeah.
It's horribly missold. I don't know who was responsible for the artwork.
But it's, but that, I think that Blu-ray's a 2009 release.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they farted that out quickly off the back of The Hurt Locker then.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly from Oscar-winning director, yeah. Catherine Bigelow. It's curious that this hasn't had a proper... I was looking for an Arrow release because I would love to have a director's commentary.
Yeah, I'm kind of shocked that there isn't... I mean, it's ripe for something like an Arrow or like a Second Sight edition.
Mm.
I would love that. Because there isn't a single extra, no commentary track, nothing.
No. And this...
like, there's so much... I want to know about this film.
Exactly. Like when I'm watching it, I'm just thinking, I want to hear Catherine Bigelow talking about this scene and why this was done this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm desperate for it. So hopefully we get something one day.
Fingers crossed,
but
yeah.
It seems like there is some sort of rights. I don't know if it's an issue or someone just doesn't want to release it. I've got no idea. But it seems just quite hard to get hold of in general.
Yeah.
I don't think it's on streaming anywhere. Not that I've looked, but given that it's so difficult to find on Blu-ray, I'd be surprised if it's streaming anywhere. Maybe it is, I don't know. But
it's a real shock. It's a real shock. And it's a shame because I think it is, I mean, amongst horror fans, I guess it's reasonably well known.
Yeah.
But outside of that, it is pretty underseen and underrated.
It definitely falls within the cult movies bracket.
Yeah. Which is crazy because it's so much better than like 90% of everything that came out in the 80s.
Yeah, and it's got so much character. It's got so much, to just sort of dig your teeth into and enjoy, really.
Oh, I see what you did there.
I actually didn't mean to do that. If I would have seen this in the 80s, there's a chance that this may have been my favourite vampire movie. I don't know, though, because Lost Boys is a banger.
It's a bit more kid-friendly as well, I think.
It's a bit, yes. It's not as dark,
I feel like, knowing you as well as I do, if you'd watched this when you were a child, you'd have got 10 minutes in and gone, ugh, romance, and turned it off.
Yeah, definitely.
And you wouldn't have stuck around for the cool stuff.
Yeah. But the soundtrack in The Lost Boys is pretty great as well.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'm still listening to that on rotation, that soundtrack, even up to this day. And that's a banger. So I don't know. But this definitely would have been in my top vampire movies had I seen it when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But it probably is like my number two now, I would say.
I struggle with this because I'm so obsessed with vampire movies. I probably would put this at the top. For a long time, I went back and forth about whether or not it was this or The Hunger.
Right.
Because that does have the benefit of David Bowie.
Mm.
But yeah, it's one of the best, I think.
I think so.
It's just so unlike any of the others.
Yeah.
Which sort of, I guess, is in large part due to the fact that it's a horror western. So that kind of leads me to ask you then, what made you choose this for neo-western?
Well,
because it's your theme, so explain yourself.
Why did I choose this one? Because when we're programming the schedules, kind of like to have a mixture of genres if possible. That's a bit more difficult when you're doing themed seasons.
Yeah.
But we don't typically do genres.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't really done many genres. We've done a thing. I just really wanted to watch it again. I really wanted to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted to see Bill Paxton's face again.
He's the best.
He's great in this. But he always is. So, you know, you're not saying much there. He's always fucking banging in whatever he's in. But this is maybe one of his best as well, which is saying a lot.
This is my favourite Paxton performance.
Yeah. But why did I put this in? Well, because it's quite simply a neo-western and you can't argue with it. There are cowboy hats. There is a horse.
There's some spurs and a tumbleweed.
There is a tumbleweed. And
they've all got names though. There's no the man with no name.
No, but they're kind of the vampire gang or like a gang of outlaws.
Yeah.
It's definitely a neo-western. There's a couple, there's one that's just straight up not a neo-western in this season. And if you listen to our Tremors show, then you'll know that it's that. And there's another one coming up, which was originally conceived as a western, but it is harder to put into the neo-western bracket. This was originally conceived as a western, you were telling me.
Yes and no.
Mm.
I wouldn't say it was necessarily conceived as a western.
Okay.
I do know that Catherine Bigelow wanted to make a western.
Mm.
And the people in charge of the money basically said westerns are not financially viable at the moment. In the 80s, they were on a bit of a downswing. And that's what kind of led them to meld it with horror. They were like, well, fuck it. Let's just do a western, but we'll mash it with a different genre and see what we get. And I'm so glad they did.
Yeah, it's great. It's unlike anything else. It's probably one of a handful of times you can point to the money people and go, correct decision.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like, I don't know, they probably just went, nah, I'm not doing a fucking western. So Bigelow went, well, all right then, well, let's do. And she sort of fused elements of the traditional western in this. Mm. I guess horror film.
Do you have details of the budget, by the way?
I do. The budget was $5 million.
Okay, wow. Wow.
Very cheap.
Yeah. Even in 1987.
Yeah. Cheap for 1987, considering how this film looks, how it was delivered, and also considering that we're just coming off of the back of Aliens, where three of the cast.
Yeah.
The cast, Lance Henriksen, Jeanette Goldstein, Bill Paxton, of course, were all in Aliens. So,
yeah.
And you'd kind of expect them to be doing huge movies. But yeah, $5 million is low. But you can see that everything that, all of the money is on the screen.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. From what I can gather, obviously, we know that James Cameron and Catherine Bigelow were together at the time.
Mm.
And it sounds a lot like Cameron kind of persuaded her to employ this cast off the back of Aliens.
Yeah.
Because they worked really well together. They're excellent on screen together. I know that Michael Biehn was considered for a role, but he turned it down.
Yeah.
I think he was originally supposed to play Jesse Hooker.
Right. I can see that.
I can see that, but I'm so grateful it was Lance Henriksen.
Yeah, me too.
I think this is probably my favourite Henriksen role, you know.
I don't know. I think I say that every time I watch a Lance Henriksen movie. This is my favourite one.
He's the goat.
Yeah, he is.
He's got such a good face as well.
Yeah. So it's got an average rating of 3.5 on Letterboxd and 6.9 on IMDb, which is fucking low. I think that's way too low for this movie.
It is, but 6.9 pleases me.
Yeah, I wonder why. crew, obviously, we've already mentioned writer-director Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah. Did she co-write it with somebody?
I believe so, yeah. Eric Red.
Right, okay.
Who, I'm not familiar with that name. But no. Yeah, Catherine Bigelow started in 1978 with a short called The Setup. Mm-hmm. Then she made a movie called The Loveless, which had Willem Dafoe in it.
Oh,
which
okay.
I haven't seen.
No, me either.
She worked on something called Touched by the Hand of God, which is a 5-minute New Order promo.
Okay.
So she also worked with New Order.
Wow.
Like, it doesn't get more perfect than that, does it? yeah, Dark was the next one. Blue Steel, which is, I've never seen Blue Steel, but I'm desperate to watch it.
Is that the one with Jamie Lee Curtis in?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
I think she's a police officer and she maybe she witnesses a murder or something.
I think maybe we considered this for our Cops season.
I think we did, yeah. Yeah. I think we did. I did try to look for it while we were sort of talking about Near Dark and watching Near Dark because I wanted to have some more Bigelow movies under my belt, but sadly not streaming anywhere.
That's a shame.
But I would like to get around to that at some point. Point Break, which is a movie that I didn't used to care for, but I seem to enjoy it more and more the older I get. It's a curious one. I didn't really enjoy it when I was a kid. I just thought, it's a bit cheesy and stuff, but that's kind of, it's meant to be that way.
Well, it's sort of a bit of a takedown of this silly machismo kind of silly action-driven films, I guess.
Yeah, I kind of liken it, like I think when we covered Con Air, I sort of said, I can see a through line between Point Break and Con Air.
Yeah.
Although Con Air, I think, was more of an accident.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it is a takedown of machismo. Machismo? Machismo.
I never know.
One of those two is right. A movie called Wild Palms, which I'm not familiar with.
No, me either.
Strange Days.
Yeah. Oh, that's the one with Ralph Fiennes?
Something, something Strange VR. Days.
Yeah, yeah.
90s VR.
Yes, I remember that one.
I have seen it, but I don't remember it. The Weight of Water, not familiar with that. K-19, The Widowmaker, which I think own somewhere, but I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Obviously, The Hurt Locker, which we've mentioned already. Zero Dark Thirty, Detroit. I haven't seen Detroit, but that's another one I was trying to look forward to watch before the show. Some really impressive credits there. I would maybe say she's my favourite female director. If we're dividing between male and female directors, I would say she's probably my favourite.
Which is interesting because you love American Psycho, so...
I do.
You'd think Mary Harron would be up there.
Yes, she is. And didn't she do... What else did she do? No, I'm thinking of Lynn Ramsey. Lynn Ramsey would be another one,
Lynn
actually.
Ramsey, yeah, definitely.
But just in terms of output, Bigelow's done loads of classic movies.
And really interesting filmography as well.
Yeah, it's not... She's not... just doing one type of thing. Yeah. She's done a bunch of different things and there's always interesting choices in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really, really good. Definitely, yeah, she's my favourite female director, definitely. DOP, got to mention Adam Greenberg because, again, The Goat, Terminator, Terminator 2, anyone, Aliens. So that James Cameron connection again. It does show. It really does.
They do all have quite a similar look, I feel like.
Yes, they do. They do. Ghost... He did that, Sister Act.
Okay.
And Turner and Hooch.
Right.
This is not your room. Editor Howard Smith, who cut Point Break, Strange Days,
okay.
The Abyss, Glengarry Glen Ross. So worked with Bigelow a couple of times and again with
and
Cameron.
Yep.
So I wonder if there's any... Do you reckon that some of these people were working on Aliens and at the time they were going, well, I'm just doing a few days on Near Dark and that's why the budget's so low.
Maybe.
I touched
it. It is low. I mean, it's very low considering the end product. I'll say that. But I think probably average to high in terms of 80s horror movies.
But that's what I mean. Like, I see movies today that are made for 50 million and they don't look anywhere near as good as this movie.
Yeah.
And they've just, this movie's got character and and it's that thing we always come back to with the practical versus CGI.
Yeah.
Practical just lives on forever.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it doesn't look great, you can see it and you know that it's there and it's interacting with its environment.
Well, I think there's only one moment in this that's actually not a practical effect.
Yes.
And that's basically out of necessity, because they it was the scene towards the end where Homer's basically catching on fire. And they couldn't make it work because it was such a windy day. So the smoke machines weren't working. It just looked like shit. So I'm unclear as to whether it's in camera effects or post.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It doesn't look great. You can sort of see the flames just floating slightly above Homer.
But I've seen a lot worse.
Yeah.
And stuff that was made since then as well.
Yeah. And it's fine. Like, by that point, the movie's built up a certain amount of good grace.
Yeah.
I just want to see Homer on fire. That's all I care about at that point. I'm like, okay, it doesn't look great. But I'm enjoying watching this.
Yeah.
Can we see him explode now?
Oh, yeah. Great.
Yeah, so cast then. Obviously, we've already mentioned some of the key players here.
Yep.
We haven't mentioned Nathan Petrelli yet.
Nathan Petrelli.
He's got a real name.
Adrian Pasdar.
Adrian Pasdar. I always say Adrian Pasdar for some
Pasta.
Reason. Pasdar.
Adrian Pasta.
Not Pasta, Pasdar. yeah, I know him from Heroes, and that is about it.
Yeah, same.
When you put this on for me, actually, I was like, oh, Nathan Petrelli.
Yeah.
And I've not seen him in anything else.
I don't think I have.
He did nothing for 30 years.
Yeah.
And then Heroes.
And then he did nothing since.
Yeah. I've written down, actually, he was the voice of Tony Stark in Marvel cartoons and video games.
Okay.
So there you go. He did that. Jenny Wright plays May. Oh, I didn't say Adrian Pastore's name's Caleb, because it's very important.
Yes.
Jenny Wright plays May. Sort of disappeared in the 90s, didn't do too much.
I'm not convinced I've seen her in anything else either.
But have you seen Young Guns 2?
Oh, God, yeah.
You have then.
Okay.
Yeah, she's got a very interesting part in that. St. Elmo's Fire, which I haven't seen.
Oh, I haven't seen it for a long time, but yeah, I've seen that a number of times.
She's in that. And of course, she's in the classic Pierce Brosnan movie, Lawnmower Man.
Oh, no. I wondered where you were going with that.
Job's War.
Right. Cool.
What was the name of the guy in that? What's his name?
I don't remember.
Pierce Brosnan.
I haven't seen that since about 1995.
I watched that a lot in the
90s. Yeah, I bet you did.
Yeah. I can't remember the main guy's name now, who plays Job. But I know that in the sequel, he gets recast as Matt Frewer.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So bad.
Yeah, I've never seen the sequel.
Yeah, so Jenny Wright unfortunately disappeared, which is a shame, because I do enjoy her in this movie.
Just quickly, when you say disappeared, not in a kind of missing, presumed dead way, just she stopped acting.
She stopped acting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? When you're talking about films, I'm kind of like, oh, it's a shame they never did this, never did that. But maybe they won the fucking lottery and they just hated acting.
Or maybe she just went like the Phoebe Cates route and just retired. Or Bridget Fonda and just went, I've had enough.
Or Heather Langenkamp.
Langenkamp,
thank you. I think she was working in costume or set design or something. So, like, you know, things change and maybe people don't enjoy acting. So it's not always a shame. Maybe they're doing other things. But
I'm pretty sure Heather Langenkamp makes bank from, like, convention appearances. And,
yeah.
Like, didn't she make the, like, 4-hour documentary about Nightmare on Elm Street?
Did she?
There's a documentary called Never Sleep Again, and I'm pretty sure she either made it or was heavily involved with it.
Have we seen that?
I've seen it. I own it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Is it? how long ago did that come out?
Oh, a while now, yeah.
There's a chance that it's on my Elm Street collection.
Maybe,
because there are some great extras in that, and we've got to get to an Elm Street movie at some point.
Yeah, we do.
I've got an idea for it. Oh, the police are here.
Again?
Yeah. It's all right. The mics never pick it up. Whenever we say that, people must think we're mad. So, mentioned Lance Henriksen plays Jesse Hooker.
I love Lance Henriksen. I think he might be insane.
Yes, I think you might be right. There's a story about in a trivia for this movie that would lead me to believe that. Yeah, and his performance in Hard Target, where he just catches fire and carries on acting, he's insane, but so devoted to the craft.
Yeah, he's not. They don't build them like Lance Henriksen anymore.
They really don't. No, they really don't. Obviously, Hard Target, Pumpkinhead.
I love Pumpkinhead.
I like Pumpkinhead as well.
So good.
Yeah. Quick and the Dead, which we watched recently, which is not in it an awful lot, but so memorable.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's called Ace in that.
He's always memorable.
Yeah.
He always steals the show.
Yeah. Aliens, obviously, Bishop.
And then he's done some absolutely shit stuff. I saw him in a movie about Bigfoot, and it was so low budget that Bigfoot looked like it was wearing a wetsuit with fur glued on. And yet, there he was, giving it his all.
Yeah.
So strange.
Yeah. He's a dude. And I don't think I ever caught the TV show Millennium.
No, I didn't. I remember it when it was on.
I think that was an offshoot of The X-Files, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
But I never saw it. I did watch quite a lot of The X-Files, but I did definitely give up on it, I think, after episode 178 or whatever. It was just too much.
Were you not into it when Robert Patrick took over?
No, I don't think so.
No.
I think maybe I probably watched it up until when Mulder left. Because he left for a bit, didn't he? Fucked mm-hmm. off and then came back. This is not an X-Files podcast. Maybe we'll do that on our companion show.
Stop saying that.
Bill Paxton.
I am so, so, so sad. I'll be forever sad about all the Bill Paxton performances that we never got.
I know. Whenever I watch a Bill Paxton performance, no matter how small it is, mm-hmm. no matter, even if he's a punk in The Terminator.
Yeah.
And he's in it for 4 seconds.
Or Chet in Weird Science.
I forgot that. I haven't written down Chet in Weird Science. But yeah, whatever he's in, he's so memorable.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy. I'm at the same time, I'm really happy that I'm watching Bill Paxton, but also very sad yeah. that he's no longer with us. So much fun in whatever he's in. We've mentioned Aliens. We haven't mentioned Predator 2.
Oh, yeah.
But he was in that. He's in a Terminator, so he's been killed by an alien predator. And I don't think he was killed by a Terminator, actually.
No, I think he survived.
Maybe he was just lightly injured.
Maimed a little.
But a bit of a Jim Cameron collaborator there. He worked on Titanic. He was, I think, the one that threw Rose in the ocean at the end. I think that's how the movie ended. True Lies, he pisses himself. Brilliant. Very, very good in True Lies.
He's always good.
Good in everything. I'm not going to stop saying that. Apollo 13, which is a big snooze fest, but I'm sure he's great. Twister, which
you
you're
love
not.
Twister.
I do like Twister. I've got a lot of time for it. New one's coming out soon with Glenn Powell.
Yeah, and Katie O'Brien. Mm. I'm quite happy
about
that.
Oh, is Katie O'Brien in it?
She did, yeah. That's the only reason I'm interested.
Oh, now you're interested, yeah. Tombstone, he's in a blink and you'll miss it role in Commando. If you haven't seen that for a while, go back and revisit that. He's in I always forget about that one. We watched it recently. Bill.
Yeah.
Frailty.
Yeah, which he directed, I think.
Which he directed, which we were speaking about the other night.
It's been a long time since I've seen that. I'd like to revisit.
Do you own it?
I do.
Let's watch it. I would like to revisit that. I remember watching it and enjoying it, but I'm pretty sure, I'm not going to spoil it, because I can't fucking remember it. but I'm pretty sure it was one of those where it had a sort of a twisty twist. And I was like, mm-hmm. I don't tend to revisit twisty twist movies, because that's why I'm watching them. But anyway, I would say one of the last things that I remember him from, one of his last really memorable performances, was Nightcrawler.
Right. He's
the, I think he's another reporter.
Right, yeah.
Or the camera guy.
What a film.
It's been a few years since I've seen it, but that is a great movie.
It's
due a rewatch as well. But I think that was, I want to say 2014, Nightcrawler. Mm. So definitely one of his last. I'm not sure when he passed, but it wasn't.
Must have been shortly after that. It's been a while now.
Yeah, it has. Jeanette Goldstein.
Yeah.
Aliens. She plays Vasquez.
I love her in Aliens.
Yeah, she's great. And Terminator 2, she plays not John Connor's mother.
Yeah.
She's not my mother, Todd. And that's all I've written down for Jeanette Goldstein because...
I mean, but those three roles alone are like career makers.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
Just retire. You're still a legend.
Yeah. And I really love her name in this, Diamondback.
Yeah.
Josh Miller as Homer and Tim Thomason as Lawyer, who's, I recognise him from Trancers. I think he's called Jack Trances. Death in that.
Okay. The only thing I recognise Josh Miller from is River's Edge, which is a really, really strange, dark drama from the 80s. Crispin Glover's in it, Keanu Reeves. It's a really odd film, but apparently he was cast off the back of his performance in that.
Right. He was cast in this off of his back.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Okay. He's definitely the most annoying character in this.
Really, really smackable. And I shouldn't say that about a child, but oh my God.
But he's not a child, is he? Because he's been a vampire for 60 years or something, they say.
Well, yeah, all right. Based on that, I feel less guilty.
But I question that, though, because if you're bitten by a vampire and it just stops you growing, essentially.
Well, yeah, your frontal cortex never fully develops then, surely.
Exactly. Look, like your brain. So if your body doesn't grow or change, neither does your brain.
Yeah.
So you're not forming new neural pathways or surely you're going to be the same person. You might have more experiences. There's no way to test this.
I mean, vampires aren't real, so
no,
really it's probably not worth spending too long thinking about.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I get it.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when we were watching it. What do you consider, I'm not going to say the best, what's your favourite scene in this?
Oh, the bar scene.
The bar scene.
Yeah, love it. It's one of my favourite scenes in any film ever.
It is really good. It's a lot of fun. I love it when Paxton just comes in, cocky as anything, sits next to the bloke that's in Terminator 2. Take it! And he does the thing, he gets his beer and he does he puts the foam on his chin and does all that. It's so funny.
Apparently a lot of it was ad-libbed as well.
Yeah. Yeah, the bit where he's being strangled by that guy.
And he takes his sunglasses.
Takes his sunglasses off and then bites him and says, I hate it when they don't shave their necks.
I hate it when they ain't been shaved.
Yeah. It's great. And he gets up on the bar and he's kicking. He's very funny, but also scary as shit because he's clearly a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that really interesting difference between those two things that makes that character so compelling and just scary.
Like, I don't know how tall Bill Paxton was, but I don't know. He plays unhinged really well, but also I think he's got quite a nice face. So I don't find him to be physically intimidating. But you're right, he is terrifying in this just because of how, like, loony he is.
Yeah.
Really unpredictable.
Yeah. And he's really fun in that scene. And Henriksen is dark as shit as well, just slicing that woman's throat and filling up that glass. I would posit that maybe you could get more than half a glass of blood from a neck. they don't seem to care too much about waste. They just kill someone and then set fire to whatever building they're in.
Yeah. Yeah, they're kind of... You'd think there'd be a trail of like wanted posters just for the arson alone.
I know. They're stealing cars, they're murdering, they're setting fire to everything.
Just indiscriminate criminals.
Yeah. There are police officers in this movie.
Yep. they're not very effective at their job.
They're not very effective. And then they're in it for a bit and then they're just gone. And you never see the police again. And it's sort of a bit of a ghost town situation. And you just think, what's going on with the law here?
But I kind of like that, though, because I think that would have sort of deviated from the plot too much.
Yeah.
And also, it kind of doesn't matter because their ultimate end is always going to be a blaze of glory. So, you know, they don't care.
Mm.
So why should we?
Yeah.
I'm quite glad that they don't focus too heavily on that aspect.
Yeah, it's not a huge problem. It's just something that I thought about. And I think that probably leads me on to I think the bar scene is my favourite scene also, because it just has to be. But if that scene wasn't in it, then it would be the shootout, because I love a shootout. And it's a Western, so we've got to have a shootout. And they're trapped in the motel, and they're getting shot out through the wall, the piercing holes through the wall, and then we're doing sunlight going through situation that hits the vampires. So I enjoy all of that stuff because of the more kind of action vibe that is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's still the bar scene.
I mean, there's so much to love in the bar scene, like the neon lights, a very panicked young James LaGrosse. I don't know, the music, like slicing somebody's throat with a boot spur.
Yeah.
There's so much cool stuff.
It's the cramps, isn't it? The cramps.
No, I don't.
Cover of fever.
Did they cover it? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I've read that somewhere. I assume that's correct.
But yeah, like... the draining blood into the beer stein, all of it is great. It's great. The whole set apparently was purpose built for the film. It wasn't
the bar.
Obviously, it wasn't a real bar that they set alight. Mm. But yeah, the whole thing was kind of built from scratch in the middle of nowhere, which again is sort of really impressive at how far they stretched that $5 million.
Yeah, especially when you consider, as you say, building that set. You've got some impressive stunts in this movie.
Yeah.
We're hiring lorries and rigs and all manner of vehicles, and
there's at least two explosions.
Yeah, there's a horse, so you've got to have a horse for a day at least, and a horse wrangler.
A horse wrangler.
Yeah, you need Daniel Kaluuya's dad.
Oh, Keith David.
Yeah, I couldn't remember his name. Thank you, Keith David. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It sort of blows my mind how they managed to do that. I do think that there was probably some favours done at some
point. Yeah, probably. It's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah, precisely.
How do you feel about, going back to vampires on the whole, how do you feel about the lore in this movie? Because they sort of winged it a little bit.
In what way?
Well,
winged it. Was that a pun?
It wasn't a pun. All of our puns are unintentional today, apparently. No, I mean, they do bite people sometimes, but I would say at least 50% of the time, they just use a sharp object to drain people of blood. They don't always kill people to eat. Some of them they just kill for fun. There's no mention really of like the traditional stuff, like, you know, the old school, do they have a reflection in the mirror? Mm. Are they averse to holy objects like holy water, crosses?
Garlic,
yeah. Which you would presume not, because at one point, in the second motel scene, Jesse's gun has a cross on it.
Mm.
So they kind of do away with a lot of the traditional stuff.
Yeah.
They are averse to daylight, though. Daylight is very much a killer.
Yes. I really like that they didn't follow the traditional route of vampires and stick with all of that kind of lore. Was that a conscious decision then to just was Catherine Bigelow like, I want to distance myself from that and just incorporate some of the more key elements, or just make it my own kind of thing?
I don't know the reasoning behind it, but yeah, it was very much intentional.
I like it. I think it kind of grounds it a bit more. Like all of that stuff we've seen a million times before. Why are we just going to do the same shit again?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a movie. We can do whatever we want. And I do enjoy vampire movies when they do change things up.
Yeah.
I would say probably some of my favourite ones are when they don't follow the traditional rules, if you want to call them that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do enjoy it in this movie how there's a point where Nathan Petrelli jumps out of the window at the motel, and he can, I don't know why, but he's forgotten that he can fly for some reason. But yeah, he jumps out the window and he puts the blanket over him,
mm-hmm.
and he's starting to catch fire, which looks amazing, by the way. And he sort of puts his arms out with the blanket over him. And I'd never noticed before. I thought, oh, that's a bit like a bat, isn't it? So there are sort of little...
There are nods.
Little nuggets there that if you're paying attention is quite rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And I'm very much on your side with this one, I think. As much as I love vampire movies, I wouldn't call myself like a purist.
Mm.
So I really don't care if they deviate away from it, as long as the rules that they come up with make sense in that world. It's one of the reasons I love stuff like Byzantium, because that did a shit ton of stuff that I'd never seen in a vampire movie before.
Yeah, no, I really like it when they decide to change things up a bit. It just makes it more interesting. Like I said, we've seen that stuff a million times before. We don't need to retread old ground. And it just makes it different to anything else.
Yeah. How do you feel about the pacing in this? Because they kind of get straight down to brass tacks, don't they?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love how this movie is paced. As I said, the first 10 minutes I was watching it, and you quite rightly said, as a 10-year-old boy, yes, I would have been turning it off after 10 minutes because of the romance shit. And then when I was watching it for the first time, I was kind of thinking the same thing. But once we get past that, it just flies. It's really well paced. I know that you said at some point that... Was it, what did you say? You said that it was your one criticism of the movie, or?
I have very little negative to say about this movie, but one thing I would say is I think it's too short.
Right.
And I don't know if that's controversial. You will not catch me saying that about very many films, but I would love to see like a 2-hour version of this.
Yeah. And I hear what you're saying. I too would just enjoy watching another half an hour of these characters interacting with each other. Maybe we're doing some more kills. But I think you get enough. And I think it's so well paced that the reason that I think I will come back to this time and time again is because of that 90-minute running time.
Yeah.
And I can just put this on and dip in and out at any point, probably mostly watch the bar scene. But I love it for how it's paced. And I think if you're going to mess with that, I think you run the risk of it not being as good, basically, in my opinion.
I guess so. I would kill for a director's cut, though. I really would.
I would definitely watch it. And maybe it would make it better. Who knows? But I love it for the pacing. I think this movie moves once you get past that initial introduction of the characters. And I think I
kind of disagree with that, because they get straight to it. You're introduced to the principal characters immediately.
Yeah.
They don't fuck around. I'd say there's like maybe 5 minutes of sort of aggressive flirting on Nathan Petrelli's part.
I don't know. It's that whole let's look at the stars shit. I'm like, come on. Yes, they're stars. They exist. We've seen this before. Let's get to it. And honestly, like I would say maybe it's because he's overshadowed a little bit by some of the other fantastic performances in this movie.
Yeah.
I think Adrian Pasdar's not great in this.
I think he's fine.
I think he's good.
I think him and Jenny Wright are good enough. I think they have decent chemistry. But I think they sort of need to be more grounded for it to work.
I enjoyed Jenny Wright's take. I was getting a mixture of the vulnerability, and also I could fucking rip your neck open if I wanted.
Yeah.
Like I got some complexity there, and I didn't. All I got from Adrian Pasdar really is that my brain is in my pants. And I didn't love it. Now, on reflection, I would say probably he's quite good, but he is definitely overshadowed by, I think, everyone else in this film, with the exception of Homer.
Yeah.
Who I didn't love Homer in this. I know we joke and say he's a little shit, but there was some little beats that happen every now and again and think, it doesn't seem like that character would do that.
Yeah.
Like when he gets given a cigarette in the motel by Lance Henriksen, he sort of lifts his eyes up and goes, ooh, like he's a kid.
But I think that sort of goes back to what you were saying, though. And then there's that moment where he goes to shake Caleb's hand and then sort of pulls it away and runs it through his hair, which is something that children do.
Yeah, true.
So I don't know, maybe you're onto something. Maybe he is a bit stunted because of when he was turned.
Yeah. Maybe.
That would make sense.
Maybe.
But then the performance would make more sense.
But then there are other times where he's laying on the floor and he's pretending to be dead and someone comes up to him and he just sort of murders them. So I don't know. I feel like there's some inconsistencies there with that character.
Have you met many children?
No.
Some of them are psychopaths, Dan.
I'm sure that they are.
I don't feel that's a stretch at all. I think that's very believable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. I think you're right. I agree. Probably Caleb and Homer are my two least favourite performances.
Yeah. But again, it could just be, look, we've got Henriksen, we've got Goldstein, we've got Paxton, who are just doing brilliant stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the thing that you sort of remember from this movie, right? It's that team, those core three.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But I think the romance angle is quite important, though.
Do you?
Yeah, I mean, it's a Western, it's a horror, but it is also a romance.
Yep.
And I guess that's where my other criticism comes in. Like I say, I have very little bad to say about this film, but I find Caleb's character really, really hard to root for.
Mm.
And that's only sort of retroactively through the lens of me as a 40-year-old woman with a bit more experience. Like, never questioned it previously, but he's kind of not great. Like, if somebody withheld my ride home until I kissed them, I'd probably bite them too.
Yeah, there's some problems with that character.
Yeah, yeah. I'm on May's side here.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Definitely agree with that. He's not the greatest of characters. He's a bit whiny as well. Obviously, he starts the movie sort of, I want to just be somewhere else. And then by the end of it, I just need to be at home. And that's my character arc. It's a bit wishy-washy, but
maybe that is his character arc. He's learning to appreciate what he had.
Yeah, no, it is totally. But they've definitely got like a toxic relationship, haven't they?
It's not great.
No,
it's not great. It's very much like that romanticized love at first sight.
Yeah, yeah. Then no matter what, we're just gonna be together and murder people.
You don't know each other. You met 7 days ago.
I know. And they're like, at the end, they're going, oh, I missed you so much. Like, why?
Yeah. You haven't had time.
Yeah.
He's been unconscious for days.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say that the romance part is the only thing that really doesn't necessarily work brilliantly for me.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take anything away from the film as a whole.
I feel like we're nitpicking here.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like
Because there is so little to criticize. Yeah. I'm clutching at straws, absolutely.
I just don't want to go, oh, what an amazing movie, and this was great and that was great. As much as I want to do that to a degree, I do want to be a bit more balanced and also think about the things that didn't quite work for me. But having said that, it's still an absolute banger.
Mm.
It's still like, I don't know if I'd go 5 stars, but it's getting up there.
It's like a 4.5 for me.
I think I'm sort of in the same... I think the first time I watched it, I rated it 4 because I really, yeah, really liked it. And now it's becoming a rewatch thing, and I've rewatched it 3 times now and watched it enjoyed it as much as the first time. It's definitely something I'm going to be able to revisit time and time again. So that score is creeping up for me.
One criticism that I have seen online is I've seen a few people talk about how they don't really care for the script, which surprises me because I think there's some absolute nuggets of gold, yeah, in this.
Yes.
Some absolute gems. I mean, even like, it's not the first lines, but the first kind of dialogue exchange between Caleb and May is great. Like she's eating an ice cream and he says, can I have a bite? And she goes, bite. Mm. And then he's like, yeah, I'm just dying for a cone. And she goes, dying. Mm. And it's kind of cheesy, but I don't know. It's sort of genius at the same time.
Yeah.
Because you know something's going to happen. You know this is a vampire movie, but what better way to just really subtly clue you into who's who?
Yeah. The script is not something that I had any issues with. And in fact, the opposite is true. Yeah. Because there are some really great lines. That's not something... I did notice those lines, but I'm thinking more... Some of the things that Lance Henriksen said,
mm-hmm,
were really interesting.
Yeah. And some of the stuff that they drop in, like it's peppered with backstory.
Mm.
And they don't expand on it because they don't need to, but it's thrown in there just to give you little crystals of context, yeah, and clues as to like how old they are, mm, and how long they've been doing this. I think that when they set the RV on fire...
Mm.
Which I love. The first time you encounter them is in a family vehicle.
Yeah.
Like, what,
yeah,
better way to clue you into the fact that they are somewhat of a dysfunctional family? But yeah, when they set fire to the RV, and I think Bill Paxton's character Severin sort of says, "Oh, remember the fire we set in Chicago or something," mm, which is, I guess, if you know your history, an obvious sort of reference to the Great Chicago Fire.
Yeah.
Which I think, according to my notes, was in 1871,
mm,
and was an absolute sort of tragedy, because, mm, I think 300 people were killed, like 17,000 structures and buildings and businesses were decimated, mm, and at least 100,000 people were left homeless.
Blimey.
So huge, huge thing.
Yeah.
And to kind of tie them into that not only kind of gives you context clues, but also kind of tells you how awful they are.
Mm.
And how they think something like that is a joke. It's a joke to them.
It also grounds it in reality.
Yeah.
And I think some of those pieces of dialogue are the most interesting because, as you say, it gives this whole thing context and it just gives you something to get your teeth into.
Stop it.
I think that...
You meant that one.
I did mean that one, yeah. I think... I don't know if you wrote this one down, but I think we spoke about it when we watched it the other day. It's when Lance Henriksen says, after Caleb has killed Severin,
mm-hmm,
I taught Severin everything he knows, but I didn't teach him everything I know.
I love that line.
Brilliant line.
I love that line,
How can,
yeah,
you say the script is not good?
Yeah.
That's insanely good.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand that criticism at, yeah, all.
And there's just loads to... Without beating you over the head and going, oh, do you remember that time we were in Chicago and we set fire in the 1870s? It's like, no, it's a quick sentence and we, yeah, were away.
They don't spoon feed you.
You're left thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. It's sometimes it's subtle and sometimes it's not. But I think it always works for me, the dialogue in this movie.
Yeah. I think the beauty of it is the subtlety kind of gives you clues about who these people are, and then when it beats you around the head with stuff, it's more fun.
Mm.
It's in the vein of fun with everything Bill Paxton says, basically. His entire dialogue.
I really love the part. The one funniest image I would say in this is when Paxton gets his white shirt on when they're trying to flag down drivers. He's got his white shirt on and he's got that silver buckle tie
bolo
thing.
Tie.
Yeah.
Western.
It's a Western. And he just sort of arches his torso slightly and sort of puts his hand out like that. And he's got that stupid fucking grin on his face. Yeah. Very funny.
Apparently the first person that drove past him was James Cameron.
Oh, really?
Because, yeah, I don't know how much truth there is to that, but I read that online because he was on set that day.
Right. He definitely would have been around for this. Definitely. He definitely would have had some influence on this.
Oh, for sure.
Bigelow's movie, for sure. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they shared some of the same cast, they shared some of the same crew, they would have been taking things from Cameron, having worked with him previously, which in turn gets transferred to Bigelow's movie.
Yeah.
And it works. I would say it adds to it.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, yeah, as much as you can see it's her movie, you can also tell that it's a big collaborative effort.
Yeah. But they always are, these movies. Yeah. And it's always a through line of what projects you've worked on, who you've worked with, who have you learnt from, what things have you taken from them, what things have you discarded from having experience with that person. And it's always, everything builds on everything. So it's everything really does influence everything else.
Yeah, I guess I just mean like you can see James Cameron's fingerprints running through.
Yeah.
But not in a sort of Poltergeist way, not in a Spielberg, Toby Hooper kind of a rumor.
Yeah.
It definitely feels like a Bigelow movie, I would say.
Yeah.
So I have a question. If you were turned into a vampire, would you struggle with the moral quandary of having to kill people to survive?
Yes.
Would you?
I'm with Caleb on this one.
Yeah.
I don't think I could just go around and murder people. What for? What? Just to keep me alive? Mm-hmm. What? That doesn't seem logical because you're going to kill thousands of people to keep one life alive. Nah. Unless you can ensure that you're getting some baddies.
Well, that was going to be my answer. Like, I would go the Dexter route and just take out people like Lawrence Fox.
And Mel Gibson.
Yeah. Try and improve the world. Do some net positive.
Yeah, that's a shout. So you wouldn't mind as long as the people were definitely guilty of something.
Yeah. Like, provably so.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, it would have to be beyond reasonable doubt. So you couldn't, for instance, take out the bloke whose wife got murdered by an owl on the staircase.
Is it Michael Peterson?
Yeah.
The staircase guy.
Because we don't know. It might have been the owl.
It could have been an owl. Who knows?
So you couldn't take him out because there's doubt.
No, that would violate my moral code. Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, I would struggle with the morality of that. Maybe there's a situation where you're doing oddly when I was watching this, I was thinking of that Jim Jarmusch movie, Only Lovers Left Alive.
Okay.
And I think
that's a good film.
In that one, they get blood bags from Jeffrey Wright, if I remember
correctly. Yeah, I think so.
So yeah, maybe that sort of situation where you can steal, I guess, blood from the hospital, which maybe you're indirectly killing someone though.
Yeah, that's not great either. That's worse because you could be like depriving somebody really deserving of it.
And I don't think vampires and vegans kind of mix too well, to be
honest.
That's
a good point. Yeah.
I think maybe you could stumble upon some roadkill and suck the blood out of there. Can you suck animal blood?
I don't know.
Depends on the movie.
I don't know.
Yeah. What else could you do? What do they do in Daybreakers? Isn't it they're trying to make a synthetic blood?
Daybreakers was terrible. I think I've just blocked that out.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what they do in other movies. Blade, they have the blood just pissing out of the sprinklers. I'd do that. I'll go to a blood rave.
I wouldn't. I would sit at home and wither just because I don't like loud music.
the blood bit's fine.
Yeah.
It's the music. It's the loud techno that would do your head in.
Yeah.
Bring it on. I can love it. Yeah. I think there's probably a way around it. You probably don't need to murder people. You can probably... Can you drink your own blood?
I don't think it works that way.
Because your own blood is already in your body, so you're not gaining anything.
Just like recycling it.
Yeah. But if you're drinking blood constantly, right, are you not just going to have too much blood in your body? What's that?
I don't know how it works. Do they poop it out like regular food?
And is it... And what does the stool look like? Is it a red stool?
Not great. Gillian McKeith would have a field day.
You are what you eat. Yeah. Yes, interesting questions that we're asking here. It's important questions.
I thought so, yeah.
Yeah, right in.
People need to know.
Would you suck the blood of regular humans? Would you have a problem with that? And if not, why?
Yeah.
Is there a way around it? Is there a more morally acceptable way to survive as a vampire?
No yes or no answers. We need to know the intricacies.
Yeah.
How would you make this work?
Yeah. I definitely wouldn't be a Bill Paxton character.
No.
Just going around slicing people with my boot.
But then if you've been alive that long, you probably would go a little bit insane, right? I'm at 41 and I'm already on the brink.
I suppose, like, no one's lived that long. So there's no way to find out what effect that would have on you. You've seen probably everyone that you care about die. Mm-hmm. You've probably had to kill at some point, just like self-defense or whatever. So you're going to just get used to that sort of thing. I don't know. Maybe your morals sort of change, I guess. Who knows? These are all hypothetical things about a fantasy movie.
Is there anything else you would like to say about Near Dark?
No. I think...
nice, succinct. No. Done. Nah.
Well, I did say no, I think.
Okay.
I was going to say no, however. But yeah, so no, but yes. I really love it. I would be happy to put this on again now. Right now.
It's funny. I had the same thought when we watched it yesterday.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the few films... where if anybody said at any time, Sarah, would you like to watch Near Dark? I can't imagine my answer would ever be no.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, it's so rewatchable. I really hope we get a nice, shiny, crispy Arrow or Second Sight put out some really good work.
Mm.
Something like that. Oh, Bliss is another vampire movie I was thinking about, actually. but I don't know why that just popped in.
Anything else you want to say? Dracula.
Manhole. yeah, I hope that we get a nice release of this at some point.
I would love that.
Fucking desperate for that commentary. Desperate.
With better artwork, please.
Yeah, not that Twilight shit that you mentioned.
I hate it.
I did see on Reddit though, someone commented, wouldn't it be funny if someone watched this because of the poster thinking it looked like Twilight?
Wow, that's going to be an eye opener.
Yeah. Yeah.
No Bella Swans to be found here.
No. I don't know what anyone else is called in that movie.
Edward something or other.
Yeah, sure. Edward, is he Robert Pattinson?
Yeah. Edward Cullen, that's it. I don't know.
Yeah, good movie, this one.
Yeah. Oh, that's an understatement.
Good choice, Dan.
That's an understatement. Going back to if I have to be critical, if I'm looking at this in a very, very, very critical light... I think the stuff that I've mentioned already, I would love it if it was a little bit longer. But it's not really a criticism because it is paced perfectly.
You want more?
I do want more. Yeah, that's how good it is. If anything, it's a positive. It's so good. I want another half an hour. I think, I don't even know if it's a criticism. I think maybe I'm just trying to be nitpicky, but I would love it if it was a little bit more diverse.
True.
But then... I don't know. It's tough. It's tough.
Yeah. No, like, that's a fair comment.
But
sure.
Then you also don't want just tokenism. So there's a fine line, but it's a very white movie.
It is a very white movie. You're right. You're right to point that out. It'd just be nice if we just had some diversity without the tokenism, as you say. It's just have interesting characters.
Yeah. I would have enjoyed that.
From different backgrounds. Yeah.
And also, from a historical perspective, how things have changed for the races over time, that could have been really interesting.
Yeah. And the stuff that, you know, Jesse mentioned about having fought for the South.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something you can do there as well.
Yeah. But again, like, it's not about that.
It's not.
Not all films have to cover socio-political themes, I get that. But yeah, it's about as close to perfect as I can imagine. I fall short of giving it a full 5. And I don't know why that is, but it is near perfect. Near Dark is near perfect.
Yeah, agreed. I think I'm exactly the same as you. I think I'm at a 4.5 on this movie now. I'm not at the 5-star mark. For me, a 5-star is all time. Mm-hmm. It's probably in my top 20. And maybe, who knows, over time, maybe this might crack that.
Yeah.
But my 5s tend to be ones that I've seen 10 plus times.
Yeah.
Not always. Fair. There's some that are immediately a 5-star, but it's super rare. Super rare.
So, with that wrapped up, what are we doing next week?
So, next week is the penultimate episode in our neo-Western season.
Yeah. I'm grinning already. I'm so excited.
And we're covering Walter Hill's The Warriors.
Warriors. Can you dig it?
To play.
Can you dig it, Dan?
I can dig it. Can you dig it?
I can.
Well, we can both dig it then. We can both dig it next week.
Awesome.